So, hello everyone. My name is Yoshiaki Amano, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to present my paper, which focuses on narrative disclosures of mergers and acquisitions objectives using a sample of Japanese firms. So first, I'd like to explain the background of the research. Last year, the IASB issued a discussion paper titled Business Combinations, Disclosures, Goodwill, and Impairment. In this discussion paper, the IASB proposed the new requirements for the firms that conduct acquisitions. Specifically, they proposed that acquiring firms should disclose the strategic rationale behind their acquisitions, the metrics to monitor the post-acquisition performance, and also whether their projections are fulfilled after acquisitions. And this proposal generated mixed reactions from various practitioners. And here are several examples among the comments to the discussion paper. For example, JICPA and SAAJ, which are the organizations of CPA and security analysts in Japan, both basically agreed in that the new requirements would be beneficial for users of financial statements. However, some practitioners such as Kay Dunlin, which is an organization of Japanese firms, strongly opposed to the proposal, saying that the new requirements would be highly costly for preparers, and also they are concerned about a large amount of confidential information being disclosed. And therefore, motivated by these arguments, the current study tries to examine the effectiveness of the disclosure about acquisitions under the current accounting standards. Then I will explain the arguments in prior literature and also the hypothesis to be tested in the current study. First, prior studies examined various objectives for firms to conduct mergers and acquisitions. And of course, if managers act rationally to maximize their enterprise value, then a primary reason for firms to conduct mergers and acquisitions is to create synergies, such as improvements in management efficiency, economies of scale, or combinations of complementary resources. However, there are many other factors that can drive M&A. For example, financial factors such as stock overpricing can also lead to M&A because if a stock is overpriced in the market, then managers would have an incentive to use such overpriced stocks as a consideration to acquire relatively underpriced firms. And also, managers can conduct M&A for their private benefits, such as maximizing their compensation or focusing on some specific business areas where they have comparative advantages to potential replacements in order to secure their current positions. And therefore, based on this argument, it is not clear whether acquisitions in general create positive outcomes for the firms that conduct acquisitions. And actually, a variety of studies investigated post-acquisition firm performance, and mixed results have been reported. First, most studies investigated short-term stock returns right after the announcement of mergers and acquisitions. And on average, prior studies suggested that acquiring firms on small or no announcement returns, while acquired firms are significantly higher returns. And this implies that in general, mergers and acquisition creates positive value, but most of the value is transferred to the acquired firms, not to acquiring firms. Next, a relatively fewer number of studies investigated the long-term accounting or stock performance, and the results are inconclusive. And therefore, it is unclear whether M&A creates long-term value for acquiring funds. Finally, another issue is the ability of the stock market to predict future firm performance after mergers and acquisitions, and some studies reported that short-term stock returns are not consistent with long-term stock or accounting performance, and therefore, it is also unclear whether the stock market can accurately predict the future firm performance after M&A is announced. And these problems can be alleviated by more detailed disclosure about acquisitions as proposed in the discussion paper. As the scope and amount of narrative disclosure has expanded, more and more study investigated the effectiveness of such narrative disclosure. And many studies pointed out narrative disclosure conveys new information to investors, but some studies criticized that narrative disclosures often tend to be boilerplate. And actually, among the comments to the discussion paper, JICPA expressed a concern that the new requirements can lead to more boilerplate disclosure because many managers would be hesitant to disclose detailed information about their acquisitions. So based on these arguments, the current study tries to examine the effectiveness of the narrative disclosure about acquisition objectives under the current accounting standards. And specifically, this study tests two hypotheses. The first is about operating firm performance. And as explained earlier, a primary reason for firms to conduct mergers and acquisitions is the creation of the synergies, but sometimes managers can conduct M&A for their private benefits. And therefore, rational managers who try to maximize their enterprise value instead of their private benefits would try to differentiate themselves from those selfish managers by disclosing concrete M&A objectives such as improvements in profitability, efficiency, or growth. And therefore, this study assumes that when acquiring firms mention profitability, efficiency, or growth as M&A objectives, their financial indicators would show greater improvements compared with firms that do not mention such concrete objectives. Next, the second hypothesis is about stock returns after mergers and acquisitions. And as explained earlier, M&A do not necessarily lead to positive outcomes for the firms that conduct acquisitions. And if managers mention concrete M&A objectives such as profitability, efficiency, or growth, then those can be interpreted by investors as a good signal that the deal is not conducted for manager's self-gain. And therefore, such concrete narrative disclosure can be positively evaluated by investors. And thus, this study assumes when acquiring firms mention profitability, efficiency, or growth as M&A objectives, they would experience higher stock returns compared with firms that do not mention such objectives. Next, I would explain the research design in the current study. First, as a sample, this study uses 232 M&A transactions conducted between Japanese listed non-financial firms implementing Japanese GAAP. And Japan can be considered as a good research site for several reasons. First, one of the main differences between Japanese GAAP and IFRS is goodwill amortization. Japanese GAAP still requires firms to amortize goodwill within 20 years, and this difference reflects the preference of Japanese stakeholders for conservative accounting. Next, mergers and acquisitions have not been so widespread in Japan in the past compared with the US or the European countries. But recently, the number and the value of M&A in Japan has rapidly increased. And therefore, detailed disclosures about acquisition objectives are getting more and more important, especially for conservative Japanese stakeholders. In Japan, M&A objectives are usually disclosed twice. First, in press releases when the deal is announced, and second, in financial statements at the end of the fiscal year. And therefore, keywords related to M&A objectives are manually collected separately from press releases and financial statements. Then, they are classified into three categories: profitability, efficiency, or growth. Next, this graph shows the composition of the sample M&A transactions. First, the left bar shows the breakdown of the sample based on the descriptions in press releases. And as you can see, more than 90% of the sample transactions mention at least one of the profitability, efficiency, or growth keywords. On the other hand, this rate is much lower based on the descriptions in financial statements. Therefore, this difference implies that the descriptions in press releases tend to be more detailed than the description in financial statements. Next, these two graphs show the relative target size of the sample transactions measured as the ratio of the total assets of target firms to the total assets of the acquiring funds. And as you can see, both of the two graphs show the relative target size is much higher for those transactions where concrete objectives are mentioned. Therefore, this implies that firms are more willing to mention such concrete objectives when they acquire relatively larger target firms. And finally, these two graphs show the cross-industry acquisition rate across sample transactions. As you can see, the cross-industry acquisitions are relatively rare when firms mention profitability as an objective compared with when they mention efficiency or growth. Therefore, this implies that firms tend to acquire similar firms within the same industry, especially when they pursue improvements in profitability. Then, to test the hypothesis one, the financial indicators related to profitability, efficiency, or growth are compared between the firms that mention these concrete objectives and the firms that do not mention such objectives. And to measure profitability, the study uses operating profit on sales and ordinary profit on sales. And for efficiency, total assets or fixed assets turnover are used. And finally, for growth, sales or total assets growth are used. Next, to test the hypothesis two, the stock returns are compared between the firms that mention any of the concrete objectives and the firms that do not mention any of them. And as stock returns, this study uses cumulative abnormal returns and buy and hold abnormal returns. Then I'd like to show the results. First, these graphs show the results of the hypothesis one based on the description in press releases. And each graph shows the comparison of the financial indicators related to profitability, efficiency, or growth, respectively. First, in the graph on the left-hand side, operating profit on sales are compared between the firms that mention profitability as an objective and the firms that do not mention profitability. And as you can see, there is no significant difference in terms of profitability between the two groups around the ERT when transaction occurred. Next, the middle graph shows the comparison of total assets turnover. And here again, you cannot see any significant difference in terms of efficiency between the two groups. Finally, the only significant difference was found in terms of the short-term growth rate. Here, as you can see, sales growth is significantly higher for those transactions where growth was mentioned as an objective, But this significant difference diminishes after 2 years or later, and therefore this was only a temporary effect. Next, these three graphs show the results of the same analysis when using the description in financial statements instead of the press releases. And as you can see, the results are very similar to the previous slide. So this means the initial objectives related to profitability, efficiency, or growth mentioned in the financial statements or press releases are on average not or seldom realized. Next, this graph shows the result of the hypothesis 2 based on the description in press releases. And this graph shows the comparison of the cumulative abnormal returns between the firms that mention concrete objectives and the firms that do not. And as you can see, there is no significant difference between the two groups. However, the results are different when using the description in financial statements instead of the press releases. Here, you can see significantly higher stock returns for those firms that mention concrete objectives only in the short term. But this significant difference diminishes after 1 year or later. And therefore, this implies that a stock market positively reacted to those transactions where concrete objectives are mentioned in the financial statements in the short term, but gradually they adjust their firm valuation based on actual firm performance because they would notice that in the end, the initial objectives are not realized. And there are several interpretations of the results. First, short-term higher stock returns were observed only after the submission of financial statements, but not after the press releases. And this was surprising because, as I explained, the descriptions in the press releases tend to be more detailed than the descriptions in the financial statements. And therefore, it is natural to assume that there would be little new information included in financial statements that are submitted later. However, the results suggested the stock market reacted only to the information in financial statements. And one interpretation is the descriptions in press releases tend to be detailed, but too detailed and boilerplate, meaning mentioning M&A objectives that can apply to most M&A and therefore obscuring the specific objectives for each deal. Compared with that, succinct, shorter summary version of description in financial statements can more clearly convey specific objectives. Another interpretation is the related information included in financial statements, such as overall fund performance, future investment plan, can help investors in making judgment. And another issue is that the significant difference in terms of stock returns diminishes after 1 year or later after the submission of financial statements. And this suggested that the stock market in the long run adjusts their valuation based on actual performance improvement. So to examine this point further, this study conducted an additional analysis by dividing sample transactions into two subsamples. The first is those firms that mention concrete objectives and actually improved the financial indicators related to objectives. And the second group is those firms that mention concrete objectives but failed to improve financial indicators. And these graphs show the comparison of the stock returns between the two subsamples. For example, in the graph on the left-hand side, cumulative abnormal returns are compared between the firms that mention profitability as an objective and actually improved profitability, and the firms that mention but fail to improve profitability. And you can see higher stock returns for those that succeeded in improvements. And as you can see, the tendency was very similar regarding efficiency or growth. And similarly, the results are very similar when using the description in financial statements instead of the press releases. And therefore, these results suggested that the stock market in the long run adjusts their firm valuation based on actual performance improvement. And finally, this study conducted several robustness tests to ensure the accuracy of the main analysis. The first approach is called Heckman's two-stage treatment effect approach. And this approach is employed to consider various external factors that can affect firms' decision-making. Here, a dummy variable mention indicating whether or not firms to mention concrete objectives is regressed on several variables. For example, cross-industry acquisition rate was different across sample transactions, and also absolute size and relative target size can affect the firm's decision. And finally, operating profit on sales, total assets turnover, and sales growth are included to control the profitability, efficiency, or growth of acquiring firms. Then, in the second stage regression, cumulative abnormal returns and buy and hold abnormal returns are regressed on the variable mentioned. And the coefficient for this variable should be positive if the stock market positively reacts to those transactions where concrete objectives are mentioned. And as expected, the coefficients are significantly positive only when the short-term stock returns are regressed and therefore supporting the results in the main analysis. Then, the second approach is called propensity score matching. And here, a propensity score, meaning the probability for firms to mention concrete objectives, is calculated based on the same probit model as the Heckman's approach. And then, based on this propensity score, a treatment group composing of firms that mention concrete objectives and a control group composing of firms that do not mention concrete objectives is matched, and this matching is conducted based on the propensity score. And therefore, these two groups can be considered very similar to each other, except for whether or not mentioning concrete objectives. And then, these two similar groups are compared in terms of the stock returns. And this graph shows the stock returns are significantly higher for the treatment group only in the short term, and therefore supporting the main analysis. Finally, let me conclude the study. This study investigated the effectiveness of the narrative disclosure about acquisition objectives under the current accounting standards. And there are three key findings. First, disclose the main objectives related to profitability, efficiency, or growth are not realized on average. Second, in the short term, the stock market positively evaluated those transactions where concrete objectives are mentioned in their financial statements. And finally, in the long run, the stock market seems to adjust their firm valuation based on actual performance improvement. And there are several implications of the results. First, these results basically support the proposal of the ISB because the results suggested the initial objectives mentioned in their press releases or financial statements are seldom realized. And furthermore, such narrative disclosure can lead to short-term overpricing of acquiring firms. And therefore, more detailed disclosure about acquisition objectives, as well as the metrics to monitor post-acquisition performance, can help investors to make more accurate judgment. But still, there is concern that the new requirements can lead to more boilerplate disclosure. And therefore, more discussion is necessary regarding how to develop more effective requirements for narrative disclosures to reflect actual performance. So thank you very much for your kind attention.